You're listening to The Truth Podcast from PursueGod.org.
Think about the last time you signed something. You're downloading an app and a 40-page terms and conditions document pops up. So what do? You scroll to the bottom as fast as your thumb will allow and you hit agree. You didn't even read it. Now the company knows you didn't read it, but the whole relationship is built on a foundation of fine print designed to protect not you, but the corporation. If you break the rules, they delete your account. That's what we call a contract. It's an if-then transaction based on mutual suspicion, basically. But today we're talking about something that is the absolute inverse of a contract. We're talking about covenants. Here's the truth that we have to wrestle with. Most of us treat our relationship with God like a spiritual terms and conditions agreement. We think if we hit the heart button on enough Bible verses, or if we show up to church enough, that God is basically legally obligated to bless us. And the moment life falls apart, we assume God has deleted our account because we missed a payment of good behavior. But what if I told you that the entire story of the Bible, from the first page of Genesis to the last page of Revelation, is held together by five massive blood-sworn promises that God literally cannot and will not break, even when you and I do break those covenants? Today, we're going to do a deep dive on these covenants. We're going to look at why a rainbow is actually a weapon pointed at God, why a desert-dwelling nomad named Abraham had to watch animals get cut in half, why a group of escaped slaves, the Israelites, were given a map they couldn't follow, and why a king's failure didn't stop a kingdom from actually coming to earth. To understand the Bible, you have to understand the word berit. That's the Hebrew word for covenant. In the ancient Near East, you didn't just make a covenant. You karat berit. You cut a covenant. It was a binding of two parties through sacrifice. The first major covenant we see in the Bible is the covenant that God made with Noah. Now, most of us think of the story of Noah as a cute nursery rhyme with wooden boat and a bunch of giraffes sticking their heads out the window. But the context is actually gritty. Humanity had become so violent that the inclination of every heart was only evil all the time. That's a direct quote from the Bible. And so God sends the flood, but then after the flood, God makes a covenant. Genesis 9:13, I have placed my rainbow in the clouds. It's the sign of my covenant with you and with all the earth. Now, here's what we miss about the rainbow. In Hebrew, the word is keshet. It doesn't mean a colorful arc. It actually means a warrior's bow. Think about that. In ancient imagery, if a god was angry, he would point his bow down at the earth. But look at the rainbow. It's pointed upward, away from us. It's almost like God is hanging his weapon on the wall. He's saying something like this. I'm committing to the preservation of life on this planet, even though I know you're still going to mess it up, and I'm going to have to pay for your screw-ups. Think of the covenant with Noah as the common grace covenant. It's like a judge who knows that the defendant is a repeat offender, but instead of throwing the book at them, the judge signs a decree and he says, I'll provide the courtroom, the oxygen, and the safety for this trial to continue because I am not done with you yet. If Noah provides the stage, then Abraham provides the promise. God tells Abraham, I'm going to make you into a great nation. And Abraham says to him, how can I know? You can read all about that in Genesis 12. Now, what follows in Genesis 15 is one of the most bizarre scenes in the Bible. God tells Abraham to take animals and cut them in half and lay the pieces in two different rows. In the ancient world, this was a self-imprecatory oath. Two people would walk through the pieces together. It's like they were saying, if I break my word, may I be like these dead and slaughtered animals. May I be cut in half. But look at what verse 17 says. It says, after the sun went down and it was very dark, Abram saw a smoking firepot and a flaming torch pass between the halves of the carcasses. If you go back and read chapter 15, you'll see that Abraham didn't walk through the pieces. He was actually in a deep sleep the whole time. Only the firepot and the torch, which by the way, were symbols of God's presence, only those things passed through. It's like God was saying to Abraham, I'm swearing the oath for both of us. If I break the promise, I die. And if you break the promise, I die. God basically put Abram to sleep so he could take the full weight of the responsibility himself. Now, the story then moves from a family to a nation. We hit the Mosaic covenant at Mount Sinai. If Abraham's covenant was about the promise, Moses' covenant was about the pattern. Exodus 19:5 says, "Now if you will obey me and keep my covenant, you will be my own special treasure." If you're paying attention, this feels more like a contract because of that big word, if. If you obey, then you will be my treasure. But the Torah, the law, wasn't a way to get saved. It was more like a mirror. It revealed two massive components. Number one, the moral code, the Ten Commandments. Now, these weren't just arbitrary hoops to jump through. They were the laws of reality. Think about the first four commandments. They're vertical commandments, talking about your relationship with God. No idols, no designer gods you can manipulate. But then the next six commandments, commandments 5-10, talk about your relationship with other people. Don't murder, don't steal, don't covet, things like that. By the way, notice that coveting is about the heart. This was the first hint that the law was impossible to keep perfectly, because who doesn't covet just a little bit, right? I mean, you know if you murder somebody, but do you really know, or does anyone else really know if you covet? And you can stop yourself from stealing a car, but it's a lot harder to stop yourself from wanting the car. So the moral code basically said, love God and love your neighbor. And so it was a reflection of the heart of God. God is love. That's what the Bible tells us later. But of course, the problem is that no one can perfectly keep the commandments. And that's where the second part of the system comes in, the temple. If the Ten Commandments showed the standard, then the temple and the tabernacle before it showed the solution for failure. And you're going to fail, right? Because God is holy and we are flawed. There's a safety issue here. We can't be in relationship with God because he's going to, in his holy wrath, just smite us and take us out. And that's why God provided for a sacrifice in the temple system. The animal took the death that the covenant breaker deserved. It was a bloody illustration of the cost of sin. And then the priesthood, these mediators who built the bridge between the people and God. And so this whole system just pointed to the fact that we're broken and we need someone to help us to be able to relate to God, to love God. Now, a skeptic might say, why all the blood? Why the picky rules about like shellfish and pork? And the biblical answer is that the ceremonial laws were cultural markers to make Israel weird. Every meal was a reminder, I am set apart for God. But the temple all along whispered a darker truth. Bulls and goats could never actually take away sins. They only kicked the can down the road. Nobody was ever made perfect. Nobody's conscience was ever cleaned up for good through the Old Testament sacrificial system. Centuries later, the nation wanted a king. That's when we get David, a man after God's own heart, but also an adulterer and a murderer. Now, despite his failures, God speaks to him in 2 Samuel chapter 7. He says, I will raise up one of your descendants, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. This is the Davidic covenant, the covenant about the kingdom. God promises that a king will come from David's line who will rule forever. Now, pause for a second, and I want you to think about the tension. We have the law of Moses, which we can't keep, and the promise of David, a king we don't deserve. And if you're struggling with the imposter syndrome in your faith, you should look at David. God's covenants aren't about the quality of the human partner. They're about the character of the divine partner. That's really what this whole lesson is about. It's not about us after all. It's about God keeping his promises, keeping his covenant, because we cannot keep a covenant. So we have safety through Noah. We have a promise through Abraham. We have a pattern through Moses, and we have a king through David, but Israel failed them all. The story gap is wide open. We need a partner who can actually keep the rules. Like, who's going to save Israel? It was really the question of the Israelites all throughout the Old Testament. who is this Messiah figure going to be? That was like this future coming king, this descendant of David who's going to make all things right. And Jeremiah, the prophet, gives us a hint in Jeremiah 31, 31. It says this, "The day is coming when I will make a new covenant. I will put my instructions deep within them, and I'll write them on their hearts." This is where Jesus walks onto the stage of world history. The Bible says that Jesus is fully God, and he takes on flesh at his birth, and then he lives a perfect, sinless life, and he goes to the cross and dies on the cross to pay the price, like the animal sacrifice in the Old Testament system, to pay the price that we actually owe because of our sin. He never sinned. We're the ones who owe that sin debt to God, but Jesus went to the cross to take it on. Before he did that, at the Last Supper with his disciples, he sits down and he takes the cup and he says this, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood." So remember the animals cut in half with Abraham? Remember the, "If you break it, I die" promise? On the cross, Jesus was the firepot and the torch becoming flesh. Humanity broke every covenant. We ignored the rainbow. We forgot the promise. We broke the law. We rejected the king. So according to the rules of the covenant, we should have been the ones cut in half. But instead, Jesus stepped into the gap. He took the self-imprecatory oath upon himself. He paid the penalty for the broken contract so that he could give us the benefits of the covenant. Here's the truth of the Bible. God is a perfect accountant, but he's a radical father. If he were just a contractor, he would have foreclosed on humanity thousands of years ago. But because he's a covenant maker, he didn't just waive the debt. He moved into the neighborhood to pay it himself. When Jesus hung on that cross, the covenantal exchange took place. He took your breach of contract, every failure, every broken promise, every dark thought that makes you and me feel like an imposter, and he took the cutting for those. And then in exchange, you and I took his covenant status. He gave us his perfect record. When God looks at us now, those who have put our faith in Jesus, he doesn't see a vassal who failed the test. He sees the special treasure promised to Moses and the eternal royalty promised to David. On the cross, Jesus did all the work while we were asleep in our sin, just like Abraham back in Genesis 15. We don't get into the new covenant by being better. We get into the new covenant by admitting that we can't be good enough and by trusting the one who is good enough for us. I want to speak directly to the person listening who feels like they are one mistake away from God walking out on them. The good news of the Bible isn't a probationary period. It's a blood-signed guarantee. If you were saved by your performance, you could be lost by your performance. But you were saved by Jesus's performance. He's the one who kept the law, because you and I could never do it perfectly. To learn more about these concepts, check out the keyword covenants at pursuegod.org.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't already, please consider rating our podcast. It's a simple way to help us reach more people. Find more resources to talk about these topics with your small group, family, or mentor on pursuegod.org.